Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast. Bye.
Hey, David. David, welcome back from vacation. Hope it was a good one.
Yes, it was. It was a lot of driving, Bruce. I will say it was a lot of driving. We took the kids to Portland, Seattle, and Montana. We went to going to the Sun Pass, all beautiful areas. The Columbia River Valley was spectacular. Of course, the going to the Sun Pass is always spectacular. So stayed at some nice hotels. And those two cities are well worth visiting as well. So,
not saying you got a large family or anything, but do you have to rent a school bus or do you just have, do you own one?
Oh, the three older boys are on their own now. They don't come.
Oh, okay.
We still somehow commit the two teenagers to come, but that's not going to last much longer, I have a feeling. So, Bruce, when I was away, there was some the players who were trying out for those teams, and I think the Canadian list had about 40 players, if I'm not mistaken, engaged in a four-team tournament? And there were some Oiler prospects in that for Team Canada. Evan Bouchard and Ryan McLeod made the team, and we got a chance to look at Bouchard. And, Bruce, I was away, but monitoring this game, and it was fortunate. It's on YouTube. You can watch the whole game. He only played one of the three games.
Right.
And so you can watch it. I watched it. I took some screen caps, and I've written a post about it. But let's start out with what you thought of Bouchard's play and kind of the response and what it all means.
What I did do was I found one clip of video on Twitter, one of the ones you chose, by the way, for your story, of Bouchard getting rather easily beaten on a one-on-one rush by a fast-moving opposing forward. And I posted that clip on Twitter with the comment that people think that Bouchard is ready to make the team this year. Might have to, you know, I have to pump the brake. I can't remember the exact wording of it. Anyway, whatever. People, I didn't recognize a lot of the names, and I'm guessing they didn't read the two posts I wrote about this guy that were almost entirely positive. But in both cases, the point was he's good with the puck, but that's all we see in highlights. It'd be interesting to see how he plays without the puck. And I think we got an eyeful in that game, and you went into more detail than I did.
Yeah, so let's start out with his performance in that game. In just one game, and Kurt Levens of the Cult of Hockey, our colleague, has made the point, like, the hardest thing for a Demon to do, like, off summer vacation, essentially, is to some of these fine things on defense, like gap control. But, I mean, we're comparing him in the same game to the other defensemen in the game, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly.
And he had the most problems of any defenseman on the Canadian team, I think it's fair to say. In terms of shutting down the rush, there was his second period was particularly rough, where he got beat repeatedly off the rush, and his gap control wasn't there. He wasn't close enough. He wasn't aggressive enough. Man, so just in watching that one game, it wasn't a great game. It reminded me of a couple things. Problems on defense, where he was just not on the guy enough, wasn't getting in his way, wasn't handling the positional aspect of those rushes well enough. Oscar Klefbom has struggled with this for years. He still does. He did last year. He was constantly beat on the rush. So this isn't unusual for a defenseman. It's not unexpected or unusual for Evan Bouchard either. It's completely expected. Mm-hmm. My last word on him before this game was let's just chill out on this player, because the problem is this, Bruce. We have you know, owners, insiders, and I'm going to offer as one of them, saying, you know, expect him kind of to be with the team in Europe, and he's got the mental processor to play at the NHL level after playing in London 3 years. I just don't buy it. Okay, I don't think that should be the verbal on this player. Shouldn't be the expectation going into this season. The full expectation should be he's almost certainly going to be needing and almost certainly going to be better off going back to London of the OHL. When we look at 20 defensemen who are the top scoring defensemen in the last 15 years coming out of junior, only four out of the 20, and they're all taken at the top end of the draft, like about half of the 20 became good NHL players. And we hope Bouchard is that, but most of them took it 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 more years in the junior hockey, the AHL, or breaking into the NHL to become good NHLers. It's going to take time. And this game is completely indicative of a player going through a process where he needs to learn.
Yeah, it stands to reason. I mean, when they were done, so, you know, that's a pretty has held sway. I certainly did see the lack of physicality, but I don't mean big booming body checks and fights. I mean, he's walking all that, as Kurt says, and as I should have been more forceful in saying in my own one tweet, it's August, right? How do you play hockey in August? He's already been at Oilers summer camp. He already had a long season. Like, when is the break for these guys? Or if they're having a break and they come and they play and they have a soft game, well, is that the end of the world, or is that just a guy who's not peaking at the wrong time?
So I say this is the best thing, because I think it really does limit expectations of the fan base in a really serious way. And I think that's really important, mm-hmm. because I think there is this too high expectations of this player for this year based on the Oilers' need for a right shot demon. And I think that really needs to go. People need to really just forget about that and just have it in mind. He's almost certainly going to go back to major junior hockey. So the one thing I didn't see in the game that I was hoping to see was they used Ty Smith on the power play, running the power play. Now, Bouchard is a better offensive player than they used Bouchard. And I was curious about that. Maybe he knows what he can do already. But I was hoping to see that, and we didn't get to see Bouchard in his feature role. You know, if he had put up two or three points or great plays on the power play, the takeaway on him might be a little different. I mean, he did make some really nice passes when the player got it and had a great scoring chance. And again, this is the kind of really smart heads up play that Justin Schultz can make. And I mean, Justin Schultz, Bruce, there's still kind of a gray, dark cloud over his name in Edmonton. In 2016-17, Bruce, Justin Schultz finished 10th in Norris Trophy voting in the NHL. He had 51 points. Mm-hmm. He finally became the kind of player. He was used in the second pairing. He ran the power play. He finally developed. 5 years, he was 26, though, 5 years into his NHL career. So let's just back off on any expectation at all that Bouchard should make the team. And I say this in the context of the sports forecaster, mm-hmm. Which they send me their magazine, Chris Russell, mm-hmm. For point projections. But they have Bouchard playing 50 games and getting 20, I think it's 25 points or 26 points. So, I mean, yeah, that's, I mean, really talented hockey player here. We saw his undeniable and his terrific offensive shooting ability, passing ability, smart plays in his own zone with the puck, just so sharp in his own zone with the puck. We saw that at the development camp. We saw a bit of it in this game. Send him to junior where you would fully expect him to be next year and give him that extra year in junior hot and stop this expectation that he's going to make the team. That's my...
Yeah, well, I mean, the good news here is that we're comparing 18-year-old Evan Bouchard to 22-year-old Justin Schultz, right? We never even got a sniff of Justin Schultz's game until he was out of college and 22 years old. And we're seeing, certainly I saw some comparables in that game, just in general approach to the game. Left me a little bit cold, to be frank, but and it's strictly without the puck, and this is where his issues are. With the puck, I think we've already seen plenty that he's going to be a force, and it's easy to project him 2 or 3 years down the road as being a huge contributor to the Oilers. To project that into this year is a little bit wishful thinking.
Yeah, it's kind of like this talk we get now about Puljujarvi, because he didn't light up the first 2 years. He's like 20 years old this season, right? And straight. Mm-hmm. Do a good job of developing these players. Don't rush them to the NHL like you did with Puljujärvi. Probably should have stayed another year in Finland. Yeah. And do right by these players. Don't expect too much early on. Develop them slowly. Really make sure they are overripe. Make sure they dominate at the AHL level before they come up. Then stop writing them off when they're 20 years old. And that. I want to see an organization which is smart enough to develop these players, Bruce. How about that?
Here's another comparison to an Oiler of years past. Another Finnish right winger with a May birthday. A guy named Jari Kurri, you might have heard of him. And when he was the exact age that Jesse Puljujärvi is today, he had 0 NHL games played and 0 points, right? He was just coming over. So it's a little bit early to be saying, he just hasn't got what it's going to take. Yeah, hello. let's give him a chance, shall we?
Yeah. So there was a, you know, I think there's some good things happening with the organization in terms of the coaching. I wasn't happy last year with, I think they were too cautious last year, both in playing rookies and in playing an attacking style of play. And I think that might change a little bit. I mean, Emmanuel Viveros kind of has that glow of the offensive coach about him. He's going to be running the power play. That's what I heard. Gullitson was on the radio, and he said Yanni's going to be running the special teams, or like the PK.
Yeah,
and
okay.
Emmanuel Viveros sounded like he was in charge of the power play.
So they were doing group efforts on
everything. It sounds like that's the reality. Well, of course, it's a group effort, right? It truly is. But one guy is constantly thinking about it, responsible, running the practices and implementing. So, I'm just hoping they start to get it. There's a bit of a turn where they actually find a way to build the confidence, the offensive confidence of the young players on the team, and give them opportunities on the power play, have a power play that functions. So I'm hopeful about that. So the Bruce, there's another bit of news this week. Jim Matheson of the Journal reports the following. Louis DeBrusque, and there's a quote from Jim from his column, Louis DeBrusque will apparently be handling color commentary duties with play-by-play man Kevin Quinn on the Edmonton Oilers Sportsnet TV broadcast this winter, with Drew Remenda doing between periods commentary for their Roger Place home games. When DeBrusque works a weekend Hockey Night in Canada game, Remenda will be providing color alongside Quinn. So this is a promotion on the Oilers broadcast, at least for Louis DeBrusque, back to the role he had in before 2014, before Remenda came in. 2014-15 was Louis' last season, I think. And what do you think, Bruce?
Well, I don't hate Remenda to the degree that many in oil country seem to. Man, there's some real vitriol out there towards that guy. And I do poke fun at some of the individual comments that he makes, and every once in a while he gets on my nerves, but not to that degree. And certainly not to the degree of hitting the mute button, which some people claim to do. To me, the mute button's the last thing. I mean, you might as well turn the picture off as a sound. I like to listen. I hope he steps up his willingness and ability to criticize the Oilers. And when I'm watching a regional broadcast, David, this is maybe where I think Remenda bent over backwards not to do, was to provide preferential coverage to the home team. Well, guess what? If it's a regional broadcast, most of the fans tuning into that game are more interested in one team than the other team. So they don't want necessarily 50-50 coverage. They want maybe 70-30. But at the same time, they don't want 100% of the coverage just talking about how good the players are and not really wanting to identify mistakes of players. I want to hear about the team. I want to hear about the guys that did things right. I want to hear about the guys that did things wrong. And this is where I hold Ray Ferraro as the gold standard. And I think he demonstrated this way back when he was a commentator on the Oilers. He didn't spare on the criticism, and he didn't spare on the praise. And he was very sort of, to me, even-handed. I strive for the same thing, frankly, in my own coverage. It's that, you know, you're looking at the one team specifically, but you got to look at the full spectrum of that performance.
You know, when Louis was on the Oilers, he was the ultimate team guy, right? Like he's standing up physically, fighting for his teammates. And I think that he very strongly has that ethic of loyalty to the team, support for the team, support for the players. And I think this was actually a problem, a definite problem for him as a broadcaster. He, even when there was glaring errors on the ice, he wouldn't talk about the individual who made them. One of the jobs of the broadcaster is to share your inside knowledge of the game, both good things and bad things that happen, your expertise. And so what Ferraro does is he breaks down in detail kind of the technical aspects of the game. Like, you know, I recall one time the puck came through the crease and the defenseman had his skates not parallel to the goal line. And the puck hit his skates. And then Ray said his skates should have been parallel to the goal line. That way, when they hit the skates, they would just go right through. But I think they were perpendicular to the goal line and they hit it and they bounced in the net. So this was like a little technical thing about the game of hockey that Ray was able to share with us. It was a mistake by a player who he named. You don't have to castigate the player. You don't have to say anything bad about him and his family and his worth as a human being. You just point out the little mistake. And Louis did not do that. And that was a mistake by Louis. And he's he got better though, I think, in shorter, smaller doses. He was more able to criticize the team as a whole when he did the between periods role.
Yes.
And it was marked how much better he got, I thought, all of a sudden when he had time to think about it and come up with a few points that he needed to make and wanted to make. He did a good job. And I'm hoping he takes that and builds on that as a color commentator, because I think he people really like him.
Mm-hmm.
Most fans are enthusiastic about this move. There's something about him that people really respond to. I think he's, you know, and then there's also his, I think his community presence, the fact he lives here in Edmonton. He loves it here in Edmonton. He raised his kid here, who's now in the NHL. So there's all that about Louis that people really seem to respond to. But, you know, I'm looking for expert hockey commentary, and,
right.
and he can provide that, but he's got to, he's going to have to tell himself before every broadcast, okay, when, especially on goals against, when mistakes are made, just in a kind of a very matter-of-fact, non-judgmental way, I'm going to have to go through them and talk about who made those mistakes. And that would be kind of a start for him in terms of being, I think, a stronger color commentator. Bruce, we did a poll at the Cult of Hockey about who do you prefer doing Oilers color commentary. So we had Louis DeBrusque, Bob Stauffer, and Drew Remenda. And I should say, to be fair to Bob, he's on the radio, so no. I don't think nearly as many people are as familiar with Bob's work as they are with Louis and Drew. But I threw that in there anyway, just to see what would happen. And I wouldn't make too much of it, if, like, in terms of Bob's popularity. He's hugely popular, especially on Oilers Now. And the people who listen to him on the radio, I think, like, generally hear good things about his work. So Louis of the 2,400 people who voted, Louis got 70% of the vote, being the preference. Bob got 19% and Drew got 11%.
Wow. So basically 6-1 between the two television guys.
Yeah, this is like a no-brainer decision for the Oilers based on that. And
last year it was the same thing, David. There was a lot of gnashing of teeth when they announced that they were keeping Drew Remenda last summer. I remember you writing an article at that time, and the poll was sort of vociferously against the guy at that time. And whatever. I personally have hopes that in the in-between period slot he'll be good, because his, you know, his hockey knowledge is good, and it's just a matter of the framing, and like I say, the focus on which team are people tuning in to watch. You want to learn about the other guys, but you really want to know what's going on in your own team.
And yeah, way too many, like his San Jose reminiscences in the first few years was over the top, and a mistake on his part. And he needed to curb that, and he did. He finally did it. He made one reference this past year. Like, he was very careful about it. So I think he learned. The other thing I've liked about Remenda, like, he's not at Ferraro's level in terms of breaking down the game and analyzing it, but he's closer than many broadcasters in terms of providing some solid analysis. He also knows Todd McClellan really well. So we kind of get a sense of what the coach is thinking and wanting in terms of when we hear Remenda speak. I found him to be a champion, or at least not negative, overly negative about players like Justin Schultz and Chris Russell, who are savaged and are the whipping boy of a certain fan segment. And you could say the same of Mark Letestu, who I criticize a lot. Like, he's very fair with the players. And he was certainly fair with Justin Schultz and pointed out a lot of the good stuff that Schultz did, even as the rest of the fan base were kind of bitterly savaging him in every mistake that he made. And Russell, I mean, he admires that player. I think quite rightly he admires that player for a lot of things he does. So I think maybe part of what the reason people didn't like Drew Remenda is he takes unpopular stands on players that are hated by a certain segment of the fan base, and they want someone who's going to blast them. He doesn't do that, but he does criticize, I think, all of the players fairly even-handedly. I haven't noticed favoritism in terms of his assessment of players. He's even-handed, and he often has something interesting to say.
Yeah, you didn't mention Lucic on that list of players that some people want to hear get blasted at every turn. But, you know, there are pockets of resistance, shall we call them. But to finish out my earlier comment on regional broadcasts, if there's one thing that pisses me off more, it's when announcers on national broadcasts treat it like it's a regional broadcast. Like, they're very different from each other. One is specific to a fan base, one is more general, broad base, And when you hear, what really gets my goat is a broadcast from Calgary on a hockey night in Canada, Saturday night against the Oilers, when they seem to spend running over the Flames. And you know, that's where the announcers have to adjust. There's a national audience. There's a regional audience. They're two different broadcasts.
Yeah. Speaking of Lucic, Bruce, just after I left, I wrote a post, and we haven't talked about it on the podcast, where, you know, there've been all this talk all summer long of Lucic discontent. There've been Frank Saravalli of TSN compared the drama and the need to move out Lucic to the Eric Karlsson situation in Ottawa, which is like Whitney and Paul Bissonnette, and I don't know the host's name, Mark Twain. Anyway, Lucic was on there, and he didn't exactly sound like Eric Karlsson, Bruce. He kind of said all the right things. And for a player on a big contract who underperformed and needs to actually prove himself and earn his spot on the team again. And what he said to Whitney after complaining a little bit about the cold and the dry cold and how much body lotion he has to use in Edmonton, which is, I think, lots of people would agree with that. He said, but you know what? To be honest, it's been great ever since I've been here. As you know, Ryan Whitney, the organization treats you like gold. And that was, does that sound like the Eric Karlsson situation to you, Bruce? Or
just like it, actually, just the same. I mean, Ottawa, they've been treating Karlsson like gold. He paid his cab fare one time, or maybe I heard that the other way around, that he wouldn't pay his cab fare. Oh, I mean, there's just absolutely zero comparison. And, I mean, on the ice, I don't think you could possibly find two more different high-profile players than Eric Karlsson and Milan Lucic. And if you're comparing, you know, their performance versus their contract, I mean, that is not a complaint with Eric Karlsson. It's just a entirely different set of circumstances. And to draw the parallel between the two was, it just didn't work for me, that whole line of thinking. Just,
well, the thing with Karlsson's girlfriend was just so...
his wife.
Yeah, and pregnancy and the whole conflict was so bizarre. Like, I mean, that just put it in a category of weird, like almost otherworldly weirdness. Unlike maybe when was the last time we had a sports, like, remember, I think in the 70s there was like some wife swapping controversies in baseball that
New York Yankees,
Fritz Peterson and Pat Dobson, or what who were they, Bruce? If that's not who it was, I apologize to Fritz Peterson.
Fritz Peterson, and was it Kekich? Anyway, it was. I mean, it really did happen, apparently, but a long way away from winters in Edmonton.
Yeah. So anyway, I think we can put all that to rest. Like, it sounds like the guy is completely keen to get back here and do his best to fit in and make and be a positive force again.
He's got a lot.
Mark it down.
He's got a lot to prove.
You know? And with the, you know, the thing about Lucic is I think the thing shouldn't be like, well, what can the Oilers do for Lucic to get him going? Right now, the thing is, what can Milan Lucic do to earn his keep on this team? How can he find a way to make himself useful? And they shouldn't be thinking about, who can we hook up Lucic with on what line to get him going? No, that's not it anymore. He's got to get he's got to get himself going. And then if he can help other players get going, but first, like, he's the guy who should be talked about being on the third line, if you ask me. Like, that's where he should be starting, because that's what he earned last year, Bruce, was third line minutes heading into this year. And he could be an effective third line player, you know, with some power play time. And I'd be okay with that, as long as he's effective in that role. So, Bruce, you've been gone to the Hlinka.
Yes.
Gretzky tournament, is that what it's called? I've been away, so sorry.
The Hlinka Gretzky Cup.
Okay.
Formerly the Ivan Hlinka Memorial Tournament, which has lived in various iterations over the years, and they've played in as far flung places as Nagano, Japan, and I believe Duluth, Minnesota, or some obscure place in the United States in the early years, but it settled down really in Czech Republic, or Czechia, as some people call it nowadays, and Slovakia. And in the last, since Ivan Hlinka died, they actually memorialized the tournament in his name. And I'm happy to see his name still on the tournament. In fact, still on the top bar with the addition of Gretzky with the North American, especially the Edmonton element to the tournament. And it's kind of exciting if you like August hockey, players, clearly highly talented players, like the quality of hockey is really good when you consider not only these guys U18, but they won't be 18 on December 31st. So this is August. Like they're 16 or 17 today, and they're top end, clearly first round draft choices, a number of them from next year and even 2020.
Who's the best player that you've seen, Bruce? Let's end it with the best player you've seen there and why you like them.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah.
If you had to pick one player for the Oilers, who would it be?
Oh, for the Oilers. Boy, oh boy. Well, you know, Sweden and their defensemen, man, oh man, this guy, Brolander, smooth skater, you know, carries the puck miles. Although frankly, in Sweden, the guys that impressed me are the forwards with the unswedish names, Alexander Holtz and, Lucas Raymond. Now there's a Swedish name for it, like Douglas Murray or something. Two youngest skaters on the team. Both not even eligible until 2020, and they're lighting it up, leading, tied for the team lead in scoring, and dominant. I went to two of Sweden's games, and they dominated both of them, at least in their time on ice. So I really like them. And Canada is so deep that to pick out a player, I mean, Alexis Lafreniere is sort of the trailblazer, and he's a 2020 draft as well, who scored 42 goals as a 16-year-old in the queue, and is the team captain as the second youngest player on the team. So there's a focal player or Canada of many.
All righty, let's leave it there, Bruce. Thanks for talking today.
All right. Nice to get caught up, Dave, and we'll look at the Darnell Nurse situation and other stuff, no doubt, in the weeks to come. Hopefully we'll get back on the regular podcast now that we're both in circulation again.
Yeah, let's talk about Nurse next time, and let's talk about – I have this hockey sports forecaster book. Let's talk about some of the projections. I'm going to be writing about some of their projections in the days to come, and let's talk about that next week. So
they have McDavid winning the scoring champion. I want to sneak preview this.
I didn't look at that yet.
Last year they had him third. Oops.
And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.